This meeting is being recorded.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to start it too, no matter how.
Looks like we have 26 people so far.
Good. Okay. It's 2:00. Good afternoon and welcome to the annual meeting of the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware. Before I go any further, I'm going to ask everyone to please mute your cell phones. And I want to alert you that we will be muting the participants unless people are going to be live. And when we get to the question and answer session, we will unmute everybody. The first item of business is to call us to order. And then I'm going to make some introductory remarks briefly, and then we will get on with the business meeting. The business meeting will include the approval of the minutes of the 2021 annual meeting, the treasurer's report, and the election of the new board. Typically, there'd be a president's report, but I think that there was so much in the winter newsletter that I'll just add to what I wrote there. I'm going to urge you, if you haven't read the newsletter, to please look for it online under publications. I think it was a great issue, including excellent articles by our own board members. There, so here's some progress notes. Gail has continued to assess the stored items at the JCC to determine what should be moved to our society archives at our new home in the Center for Jewish History at the Cox House. We have returned to our fundraising efforts to build an endowment that will support our operations. We have been working on upgrading our website and making our oral history materials more available, as you'll see later today. We've been doing more outreach and collaboration. We've had some new partners, such as the Woodlawn Trustees and the Red Clay School District. We are continuing to apply for grants to further our mission. I'm going to save most of our thank yous for later in our program, but I don't want to wait to recognize the importance of our archivist, Gail Pietchik. Thank you, Gail. After the business meeting, I will serve as the moderator introducing program segments. But back to the business meeting. So I'd like to call for a motion to approve the minutes as posted on our website. This is the minutes of the 2021 annual meeting. And a second? Yes. Okay. Here in Zoom land, where it's hard to count heads, we generally count no votes. So I'm going to call for the people who are opposed to approving the minutes to please raise their hands either physically or in the participant option. I'm sorry, I just lost the raise your hand option.
It's reactions, Diane.
Sorry, thank you. Under reactions. Hard to see the small print. So our secretary is counting. Okay. And Robin, do we have any no votes? Which you can't unmute.
I do not see any no votes.
Excellent. The minutes are approved as distributed. Now we're going to move on to Paula Gordon's treasurer's report, and it will be pre-recorded. It's pre-recorded.
Hello, everyone. I'm pleased to present a brief report about our fiscal year 2021 and our financial plans for 2022. The bottom line is that we are doing well financially, thanks to our generous individual donors, community organizations, and an important grant from Delaware Humanities and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Our fiscal year is the calendar year, January through December. Please note that these first two slides cover operating revenue and expenses only. Cox House-specific donations and expenses are reported separately. Our operating revenue in 2021 was $25,212.90. Almost two-thirds of this came from you, our generous donors. We also received an allocation from the Jewish Federation of Delaware and grants from the Pollyanna Foundation, the Frank and Yetta Chaikin Foundation, and the Isidore and Ida Schutzman Fund. Combined, these grants made up almost one-third of our operating revenue for the year. We participated in Do More 24 Delaware for the first time last year and were amazed at the response. Without much advance notice, we generated more than $800 in those 24 hours. Less than 1% of revenue came from other sources, including checking and savings account interest and purchases of JHSD publications. We spent $21,120.95 last year, less than we earned, and this includes the brand new costs of occupying the Cox House, which began in April 2021. All told, total expenditures in 2021 were similar to 2020. The added costs of the Cox House were balanced out by a reduction in the number of hours billed by Gail Pietchik, our archivist, for day-to-day operations and programs. She spent a lot of time planning and preparing our collections for the move, and these hours were entered as one-time Cox House expenses, as opposed to operating expenses. Program expenses were mainly digitizing oral history tapes to preserve them and allow us to share them with the community, as you will hear about in today's presentation. It looks like the program expense category is just a small slice of the pie, but in fact, most of Gail's time is spent on activities and programs that fulfill the mission of the organization, as you can see on the next slide. In other words, her time is spent on just about everything having to do with our collections, programs, and public outreach. I took this photo of Gail chatting with Lou Brown of Blessed Memory in January 2019, when Gail was helping volunteers pack up the archives of Otis Kodesh Shelemeth Synagogue. In late 2019, the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware began a campaign to fund our move from our space in the basement of the Research Library of the Delaware Historical Society to what has become the first building in Delaware dedicated to the study of Jewish history, the Delaware Center for Jewish History at the Cox House. Our original goal was $360,000, $260,000 for our share of the renovation of the building, and an additional $100,000 to start an endowment. We are proud that despite the disruptions caused by COVID-19, we were able to raise almost $308,000. Thanks once again to the generosity of the community, we raised enough money not only to satisfy our contractual obligations for the renovation of the Cox House, but also almost exactly enough to furnish and equip the building and move in. Included in this total is $10,000 from the Milton and Hattie Kutz Foundation. The foundation has committed another $5,000 in 2022-23 for a total of $15,000 granted. Aside from the renovation costs, our one-time expenses relating to the move fall into two main categories: purchase and installation of furnishings, equipment, and signage for $30,204.03, and move-related services, such as space planning, preparing for the move, and moving costs at $19,768. Note that the first year of Cox House operating expenses appears as part of this pie chart. This is to give a full picture of the project to date. These expenses fall into the approximately $6,200 spent on the project that we covered from our operating budget and cash reserves. And speaking of Cox House-related operating expenses, as some of you already know, we have resumed fundraising for an endowment. From the beginning of the project, the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware's board recognized that we would need an endowment to help us cover future occupancy costs and to foster the transformation of the society into a more vibrant organization with greater capabilities. Last summer, even before we moved in, the board began planning a new round of fundraising to create our endowment. We established a separate fund with the Jewish Fund for the Future at the Jewish Federation of Delaware, where contributions are prudently invested and managed. Our current goal is at least $150,000 to generate sufficient monies to fund an annual draw to help cover our new occupancy expenses. These include rent, electricity and internet, security monitoring, commercial liability insurance, signed permit fees, janitorial and planned maintenance, and a contingency for unexpected maintenance and repair. We will continue to grow the endowment in the future to cover additional needs that may arise as we expand our capabilities. This has been a targeted campaign so far, but more information about it will be shared in the coming months. Please inquire if you would like to be contacted before then. No discussion of the Cox House is complete without mentioning our long-term partners, who encouraged us and provided support at every turn: the Delaware Historical Society and the Jewish Federation of Delaware. We especially thank Delaware Historical Society Executive Director David Young, Chief Curator Lee Riefenberg, former Director of Buildings and Grounds Martha Moffitt, and Facilities Manager Thomas Jones. At the Federation, thanks go to President and Chief Executive Officer Seth Katzen, Associate Director of the Jewish Fund for the Future Gina Kozicki, and Controller Terry Kuzo. Other program partners include the University of Delaware Department of History and the UD Jewish Studies Program. Our student interns come to us through these programs and work on special projects under the guidance of professors in these departments, including Professor of History Roger Horowitz, who will be presenting shortly. We also partner with Jewish War Veterans of Delaware to maintain the Jewish Veterans Memorial at the Siegel JCC, and we work with Jewish community organizations and synagogues in preserving their archival material. And of course, we consider all of you our partners in telling the stories and preserving the history of Jews and Jewish life in Delaware. Finally, here is a snapshot of 2022 to date. The blue bars represent the percentage of total revenue or expenses, and the red bars show how far along we are in meeting these projections. As you can see, our operating budget for 2022 is about double our budget in 2021. The increase is due to a few factors. First, now that our move is complete, Gail can devote the full complement of hours to archivist activities, fielding inquiries, programming, research, and processing new accessions, such as materials from Adas Kodesh Hel Emeth, the Helena Wind Preston Holocaust Education Committee, and the Siegel JCC. Second, we are increasing outreach within Delaware and beyond, which means more money spent on advertising, as well as memberships in professional associations for archivists and historians and those dealing with documenting the Jewish experience in the United States. Third, with an increased presence comes greater responsibility and accountability, and we are investing in commercial software and professional services for bookkeeping, donor tracking, and similar internal functions. And finally, this year, while we are still funding our endowment, we will pay all Cox House-related expenses from our general operating budget. All this is possible because of an American Rescue Plan Act Recover Grant, which we applied for and received from Delaware Humanities, a statewide agency distributing funds made available by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Grants awarded by this program are intended to strengthen humanity's nonprofits as they emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic. The goal is to create more resilient organizations, and for us, that means strengthening our internal capacity and increasing our donor base and other sources of revenue through more outreach and community engagement. I'd like to take one more opportunity to thank these community organizations for their support in the form of grants and allocations. The Jewish Federation of Delaware, the Milton and Hattie Kutz Foundation, the Pollyanna Foundation, the Frank and Yetta Chaikin Foundation, the Isidore and Ida Schutzman Fund. And finally, we thank you, our members and donors, for supporting our work. A version of this report will be posted on our website after the meeting. Please feel free to contact me with any questions or comments. Thank you again for your support, and thank you for your attention.
And thank you, Paula, for a wonderful presentation. You'd think Paula was a financial officer. She has really learned on the job and done just wonderful, wonderful work for us. On the subject of thanking people, I promised the end, but I can't let Richard Levin do his last official job for us. This is his last meeting as a board member, and he is going to, I just can't not thank him enough for all he's done, helping us to move into the Cox House, to negotiate agreements, to initiate the Minion Fund, to really build our endowment. So on behalf of everyone, thank you, Richard. I'm now going to turn the meeting over to Richard, and who is representing the nominating committee.
Thank you, Diane. The nominating committee has met, and there are, in addition to the 13 holdovers currently on the board, who are Harriet Einbinder, John Elzaphan, Paula Gordon, Tina Hyman, Roger Horowitz, Paul Lukoff, Don Parsons, Ron Reibman, Charles Salkin, Robin Sarin, Robin Silver Zink, David Wilk, Diane Wolf, and Peter Zoll. There are two nominees. Robin is not a holdover. She's a new candidate. So Robin Silver Zink and Michael Joseph are our new nominees. I submit them for consideration by the society and urge their election. And everybody is casting their votes, I see.
That seemed to go pretty fast.
Who's entitled to vote?
All members of the association, or the society, excuse me, one per household. Ron and Selena cannot vote twice.
Where is the poll?
I can't tell whether I voted or not. Something flashed on my screen.
How do you vote, by the way?
Ben, can you?
Oh, this isn't an Australian ballot?
It says, do you approve of the slate? And it shows the vote.
Does it show who voted?
No.
We'll get that information.
I had something flash up on the screen, and then it went away.
Yeah.
Let me ask a simple question, as opposed to this quasi-official vote here. Is there anyone in this meeting who opposes the slate?
Just a slight correction. It's Robin Sarin, who's the new member. Robin Silver Zink.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I stand corrected. I'm sorry, Robin.
That's okay.
Robin Sarin is, I'm sorry. Hearing no objections, I submit, Madam President, that the slate has been elected.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes the business part of our meeting. And now we're going to move on to our program. Thank you, everyone. Okay, so I'm going to serve. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble with polls popping up in my face. Okay, I'm going to serve as moderator for the rest of the afternoon. We're first going to start with images of the Center for Jewish History at the Cox House. Then we will have presentations on oral history and our society's oral history resources. Most of the presentations have been pre-recorded, and we will get back to live communications with a question and answer session. You will later see another form, and hopefully you will complete that one because we're going to be calling for volunteers. So with no further ado, I'd like to call for our quick tour of the Cox House.
Welcome to the Delaware Center for Jewish History at the Cox House. We are pleased to show you around today. We started with these empty rooms in a beautifully renovated 19th century building, and it took a lot of work to get here. We added tables, chairs, and desks. Almost a year ago, we started moving in some of our collections. We were excited to get started working in our new home. There were shipping and manufacturing delays for the shelving, but bright and early at 7 a.m. on September 30th, our shelving installation team arrived. Caitlin, Chad, Ryan, and Gary never lost their cheerful, friendly, and helpful expressions, even as a long day and a lot of hard work wore on. It was a big job unloading and assembling our shelving. And they worked quickly, and the shelving appeared. We had been planning for months to prepare for moving day. Each of the boxes in our collections were color-coded, pink for the records of congregations, green for the Jewish Federation of Delaware and all the other organizations and agencies of the Jewish community. We planned where everything would go. The movers from Bayshore came early on the morning of October 12th to start moving all our collections from the basement of the library building into the Cox House. They cleared off the old shelves in the library. All that planning paid off. Everything was moved to its proper place. Of course, all the help we had from volunteers and board members was a big part of our success. Here's Paula Gordon taking a selfie for our Facebook page. On November 10th, 2021, a crew from Tufts Signs arrived to install our new signs. Don't they look great? It's a beautiful home, and we are looking forward to your visit. You are always welcome. Our records and documents and collections are here for you to use. We need your help to tell the story and let everyone know what a treasure we have in the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware and in the memories of Delaware's Jewish community. The men and women who built this collection, from Emil Topkus and Bill Frank, Yetta Chaikin, and so many more, wanted you and your children and the future generations to use it and learn from the wisdom and insight it contains. In our home, your home, there are wise men and women. The dust is on their boxes, not their shoes. You can hear the recordings and read their thoughts. While you may not touch the hands of those who live here, I guarantee that if you come and spend some time with them, they will touch your hearts. We are open by appointment, call, or email, and drop by soon. I look forward to seeing you at the door.
Thank you, Gail. I hope everyone will have a chance to see our beautifully renovated building soon. The next part of the program is going to feature our board member, Roger Horowitz. This is a University of Delaware produced video of Roger telling us about oral history. Yes. Ben, I have no audio.
So my apologies, the program crashed. let's try this one more time.
The best stories in an oral history interview are usually ones you didn't know were there. And to get to those stories, you have to listen and learn. One of my lessons is ask open-ended questions, because you never know what the person's going to say. An example that I give usually, and I play this in my class, is my interview with my stepfather. I say to him, Al, what was your first memory? And he says, well, it was the day my parents left me. And he tells me the story I had never heard before, about being 1 1/2 and about being in the backseat of a car, Calumet City, 1930. Remembering his father make a phone call, they go back to the house, he gets up the next morning, his parents are gone. With oral history, the past is personalized. It's an extraordinary, powerful experience. It's effective for the same reason that everybody wants to read about biographies, because we understand the past through the lives of the individuals who lived it. The difference is, in oral history, the person who lived it is sitting across from you, answering your questions. And for a student, that can be transformative.
In terms of exceeding my expectations, I literally will walk away from every single one of my interviews learning so much from the person. To feel the connection with someone, especially being 19 and connecting with people who are 90 to 100 years old, is just really special.
How often does a 75-year-old talk to a young college student unless they have a grandchild who's a college student? So it brings communities together, it brings generations together in a way that would not otherwise happen. Oral histories provide an angle on the past that you can't get from any other source. I just think oral history is the greatest thing.
Well, Roger's video is a great lead into the interview that Dahlia did with Faith Brown. I'm so happy Faith can be here today. Obviously, we can't play the full hour, but we have taken selections that we really think illustrate the wonderful connection that Dahlia and Faith had. So here's the next video.
Well, who's going to be the winner of this? You can catch the Valero Texas Open Winners Live Press Conference on the PGA Tour's Facebook or Twitter account Sunday after the final drops.
The downtown Wilmington was interesting because most of the stores and the Jewish merchants, they were all Jewish. We had Bronsteins and Arthur's, Finkel's, Rosenbaum's Toy Store, Lipstein's. They were almost all owned by Jewish families, because when the immigrants came over, they had no particular profession. So they went into peddling clothes. And you hear about all the peddlers, you know, in New York. And then they went from that to have a store, and then a bigger store, and a bigger store, as they became more successful.
Yeah.
And today we have Gimbel Brothers and other big stores that we all know about. And the most famous in town was on 5th and Market, called the Wilmington Dry Goods. And there you came in and you picked things off tables, no dressing rooms. You changed your clothes in between the tables and your friends stood and guarded you so you wouldn't be embarrassed.
Yeah.
And they had their Dollar Day sales. It was a very big event. Interestingly, because Lazarus was a Jewish family, they closed the stores on every Jewish holiday. So when it was the Jewish New Year, closed. Jewish Day of Atonement, closed. Mm. And other stores followed suit because they figured if the dry goods wasn't open, it wasn't worth opening their business. There was a huge store, like a Walmart kind of store. Mm. And the others followed suit until later when less observant merchants came in. Mm. That wasn't the case. But when I was growing up, all of them were closed on the high holidays. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. They knew, don't go shopping because the stores are not going to be open on Rosh Hashanah. We lived in mostly Jewish neighborhoods, and there was rare intermarriage. In fact, in extreme cases, parents who had a child who intermarried, they sat shiva for them. They went into mourning, and they had lit a candle, and they couldn't mention the child's name. It was like the child had died. And that was in Fiddler on the Roof, too, where the whole big, terrible thing in the family, the daughter married a Russian, and the father couldn't accept her. She's not our child anymore. It's like you divorced your child. They couldn't mention the name. It was leaving the religion was a terrible thing in those days. We lived in mostly Jewish neighborhoods, as I said, and we patronized Jewish doctors and lawyers and dentists, and even our pharmacist was Jewish. People tried to patronize their own people. Yeah. People still probably do that. You know, if you're Vietnamese, you go to a Vietnamese manicurist, even though most of them are. And people patronize their own a lot of times. So that happened. Doctors actually made house calls, and they charged, guess how much? $2 a visit for a house call. Wow. And sometimes they were paid with a zucchini loaf of bread, or jam that mom had made, or some other goodie. They didn't have the $2, so they would pay him in some delicious food that they made. But the house calls, we expected that when you called the doctor. You meant you called the doctor.
Right.
Come over. And they did. So that was something very different from today. If you had a contagious disease, your house was quarantined. They put up a sign that said quarantine, and that meant no one was allowed in because, you know, they might catch that disease. So nobody could come in or out. Mm-hmm. And that was very common, and you don't see that much today. Sometimes buildings are quarantined if a lot of people get...
like the little blue box about, and how your heroes were for Israel, and your heroes were people like Theodore Herzl and stuff. Can you describe a little bit about your connection to Israel growing up, like really what it was in your family?
Well, my family was rare at the time. So we were labor Zionists. Mm-hmm. That meant we were for not a religious homeland in Israel, but a pioneering force in Israel to come work the land, build the land. So the ideals in my family and many of my friends with their family was to go to Palestine and work the land and live there and build the land as builders, as pioneers.
Yeah.
And eventually we did that.
Yeah.
My family did. And in 1949, my whole family, I had just married my husband, and he had the same ideology. We went to Palestine on a Turkish steamer.
Yeah.
It was not a passenger ship. We went for 21 days. We were seasick the whole time. And we finally stopped in Greece for one stop, and then we stopped in Haifa Harbor.
Yeah.
And my husband and I went to a collective called the Kibbutz community, and we worked there, and we lived there. And my parents and my brother went to the city. And my father had always had a little store, a little dry goods store, and he thought he could open another one. But a lot of red tape, a lot of things went wrong.
Yeah.
It was difficult. A new language, a new culture, and he wasn't able to make it. So my parents went back.
Yeah.
And Lou and I remained, and then eventually, because my family was back in Delaware, it was hard to be separated. So we came back and rejoined them.
So. Can you describe a little bit about what Israel was like when you went in? You said 1949, a year after its establishment.
Yeah.
Can you describe a little bit about like what it was like? just like Israel, day-to-day life, like.
Well, it was a very new country.
Yeah, very new.
Much of it was desert.
Yeah.
That had not yet been developed.
Yeah.
Even the city of Tel Aviv, which is the biggest city in Israel, the most modern probably, it was nothing but piles of sand.
Yeah.
And here and there would be a house, and here and there would be a store.
Yeah.
But hardly anything. It was a really new community and gradually got bigger. And Lou and I would walk on the beach, and instead of getting hot dogs or ice cream, there was a guy with a big kettle of hot water hollering, "Tiras, Tiras." It was corn on the cob. He sold hot corn. They served it to you for like a dime in the husk, put salt on it, and that was the refreshments of the beach.
Wow.
But you didn't have beach chairs and umbrellas, none of that. People just ran into the beach, they swam, they went back home.
Yeah.
And it was very, very, it was just a brand new country.
Yeah.
Cities were very sparse. There were no malls like they have today. And,
yeah.
But a lot of gardens and parks. Israel was always with nature.
Yeah.
And nature communities. So it was a working class people and religious. The very religious came for relief for their own purposes, you know, to pray in the homeland. That was the big thing.
Right, yeah.
To live and pray in their own homeland.
Yeah.
They didn't do much building.
Right.
But a lot of praying.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you were going to Israel, you know, in 1949 with your family, what did people, you said your family was pretty rare about how they like talked about Israel. What did your friends from home, did they have any opinions on it? Or?
They thought we were rather crazy.
Yeah.
Because they knew this was a new country,
yeah,
undeveloped. And what were we going to do there? I mean, and leaving our family, our friends, our society, our city, they couldn't understand why we would do that.
Yeah.
If you're going to some wonderful, luxurious country,
mm-hmm,
went to Paris or something, that was different. But this is a brand new country.
Yeah.
And they thought we were really a little bit cuckoo.
And did you think twice about going to Israel? Was it just a given for you?
Never. Because I grew up in an organization called Habonim, which meant the builders. It was a youth group for kids who felt their ideal was to build the land.
Yeah.
They're the pioneers.
Yeah.
And in every culture, you have a group of people who want to, you know, do the tough work and build the land. And we felt it was very idealistic.
Yeah.
We didn't think of it as hard and grimy and all that. We thought, boy, we're going to be the builders of this brand new land.
Yeah.
And we were thrilled and excited. Never thought it was a chore or anything like that.
Right.
We were so idealistic.
Yeah.
Whatever, it's too hot there, they said. You're going to swelter. It's a desert country.
Like,
so what? You know,
yeah.
So I'm going to the beach. Never thought
of
it being a hardship.
Yeah. So about the dance group that you and your husband founded?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's been about 71 years now. We came back from Israel, wanted to bring a little of Israel back with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we had heard a lot of Israeli songs while we were there, idealistic songs, spirited songs. And when I went to summer camp with my Zionist group, youth group that I belonged to, we all did dances and stuff.
Yeah, I know.
So we wanted to continue that.
Yeah.
And my husband loves dancing. He's a very good, was a very good dancer. So we started in our synagogue a little bit. We wanted to do a few dances.
Yeah.
And we started with a small group and made our own little costumes out of Muslim material. And 71 years ago, we had our first little show, and we called it the Israel Music Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 years later, that was in 1955.
Mm-hmm.
In 57, he started the dance group. First, it was a choral group of about half a dozen people. We sang songs, we did harmony, and so forth. And we would sing for the synagogue. And then the other people said, hey, that looks like fun, sounds good. So they joined. Eventually, we had about 20 singers, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dancers grew and grew and grew. You saw the latest group, they're still in existence, not all the same people, of course, but we began, and then we were the only Israeli singing and dancing group. Not that we were Israeli, but the music
was. Yeah.
So we sang for schools, we sang at the Hotel de Pont, we danced downtown Wilmington for different events, community days, and we were the only ones representing Israel. When there was a, you know, community dance fest, there were Greek dances, there were Russian dances, but we had the only Israeli dance group.
Yeah.
And we had costumes. We, a lady in Arden, Delaware, made us costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So we performed a lot of places, mm-hmm. not just in Wilmington. We'd go to Philly, we'd go to Chester, we went to surrounding areas.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, that's so incredible.
We spread. It continues to this day. We call it today Cafe Tamar. And it's been called that for about 65 years. We used to call it the music, Jewish Music Festival. And then we call it Cafe Tamar, which is a palm tree.
Right. So why do you call it, how did it get that name?
People thought instead of just saying music festival, they wanted, we made it like a, coming to a cafe.
Right.
We had tables and chairs.
Yeah.
Then later we made it auditorium style.
Right.
We used to have, with food, some years we had a whole Israeli meal.
Yeah.
Like falafel.
Yeah,
things
yeah.
like that. And it varied from year to year. So we expanded our musical repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we had Bea Bell from Arden teach us dances or choreograph,
yeah.
make them look better. And we had some music teachers like Mrs. Frankel, who taught music in the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
She came and directed some of our, gave us a few more ambitious four-part harmonies
yeah.
to make us sound really good. But everyone just loves you. You see the recent pictures, you
yeah.
see the joy in their faces.
Definitely.
And bringing that music to other places has always been very special.
Yeah, and it's really bringing a little part of Israel back.
Well, the way we feel, that's part of our legacy. We'll be remembered, you know, singing
yeah.
and dancing.
Yeah.
And,
So that was a taste of the full hour. It's a wonderful interview. And again, thank you, Faith, for sharing your life history with us. On the subject of sharing life histories, the next part of our program is gonna feature our archivist telling us about how the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware is collecting and making oral histories available.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware's annual meeting, and welcome to our oral history collection. It's a lot bigger, older, and more varied than you think. We have interviews from before there was a Jewish Historical Society of Delaware. Some of the earliest interviews were ones made by Emil Topkus, and those are not audio recordings, but written out longhand in tiny script. On the left, that's a letter-sized file folder behind the note cards Emil Topkus wrote on when he wasn't using bits of paper and the backs of envelopes. He even zoomed in, as you can see on the right. It can be a bit hard to read. Emil interviewed family members. The extended Topkus family was already a large subject when he started his research about Delaware's Jewish history in the 1960s. His research extended to other families and went beyond the sources of living memory. He researched newspaper articles and other materials as well. But it all starts with a story. We also have some video oral history recordings, and we hope to be making them available on our website soon. But today we are going to talk about the nearly 200 audio recordings on magnetic tape in our collection. Some date back to the 1960s. In 2020-2021, with the help of the Jewish Federation of Delaware, we digitized 89 cassette tape recordings. Most of these were oral history recordings, but some were not. In one case, on the B-side of an interview with Rosa Kyle, I think that Bill Frank had recorded the oral history interview over an existing tape that he had done for an article in the News Journal. We couldn't know what was there until we transferred these recordings to a format that we could listen to. Those tapes are now more than 200 digital files on our website, and we have a specially curated exhibit to introduce you to the treasures that this project has opened. The oldest recording I have found so far
is one from 1967, Rabbi Simon Krinsky telling his story in Yiddish with some commentary from his family. Our most recent is a 2021 interview of Barbara Yaloslav made by Dahlia Handelman, a University of Delaware student who has worked with JHSD as a summer intern since 2019, and you can listen to both recordings on our website. And there's Marvin Balick's Social History of West 2nd Street Jewish Community, based on his interviews from the late 1990s. You will find a couple of the recordings in our digital collection. The simplest way to open this collection is to visit our website. You will find us at https://jhsdelaware.org. And in the navigation menu below the picture of Wilmington Dry Goods, you will find a link to our online exhibits. Let's zoom in on that and click on the little down arrow next to the word exhibits. A drop-down menu shows a link for the oral history collections. Click on that link. If you're visiting the website on a mobile device, like a cell phone or iPad, the web page may look a bit different than it does when you use a laptop or desktop computer, but it works the same way. You'll just have one extra step. You need to click on the menu button, which I have circled in red, to open the navigation menu. The menu drops down, so you'll need to scroll down on your phone or iPad to read all of the options. And just like with the full-size web page, you can click on the Exhibits menu item to get to the oral history collection. For those of you on a laptop or desktop computer, the oral history collections page will look like this. On a cell phone or mobile device, it will look more like this. All the content is the same and the text is large enough to read. At least it should be. But you can all be my beta testers and let me know if there are any problems with these web pages when you visit them. With all the people attending today's program, there's sure to be dozens of different devices that I have not been able to test to see if the website works properly. So I really appreciate learning if something doesn't look right or doesn't work the way it's supposed to. Let me know if you have a problem. Let's go back to the full-size web page and take a closer look at it. There's a menu bar at the top, which allows you to visit three other pages, and an icon on the right. I wonder what that does. Let's see. That opens up a panel at the top of the screen with additional information about the highlights of the Oral History Collection web exhibit. You will learn that the exhibit was curated by Mary Rose Fay, a Steward intern who worked with us in 2021. We will be interviewing applicants for the 2022 Steward internships later this month. We are delighted to work with the summer programs at UD, both through the Jewish Studies program and the University of Delaware History Department. We've had great experiences working with the summer interns, Rachel Bonney in 2018, Dahlia Handelman in 2019 and 2020, and Mary Rose Fay last year. They helped us accomplish so much and have been a pleasure to work with. You will also find photo credits. Here's another way that you can make a difference. Your family portraits and images could add a lot to website exhibits like this. Please consider sharing a digital copy with the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware and help us tell the stories of Jewish Delaware with illustrations. And don't forget you can tweet, like, and contact us. The icons on the right link to our Twitter page, Facebook page, and open an email message so you can help us tell your stories better. You can also visit the Digital Collections portal. More on that later. Now that you've had a tour of what's hidden at the top of the page, let's scroll down a bit. At the bottom of the introductory text, there are more buttons, so you can visit our website, our digital collections, or become a member. We hope you already are a member, but we'd also hope that you'd like to share this information about our oral history collections with friends and family and encourage them to become JHSD members too. Now we can see what is really highlighted on this page, the people and their stories. Mary Rose Fay chose 16 oral histories to showcase our collections. Each entry has a brief biographical sketch and some background information about the interviews, how long it is, when it was recorded, and who was the interviewer. In some cases, we have more than one interview with an individual, people like Sally Topkiss-Ginz, Molly Sklut, or Dr. Ralph Tomasis were interviewed and recorded more than once. I wish we had even more. Some of the people interviewed have such great stories to tell and long, fascinating careers. But we are certainly glad to have each and every interview in our collection, even the short ones. So the highlights page features interviews with Bennett and Alice Epstein, William Feinberg, Rona and Nissen Finkelstein, Estella Hillerson Frankel, Rabbi Leonard, Dr. Abraham Golden, Rosa Kyle, Rabbi Simon Krinsky. That's one of the earliest tapes we have. It's amazing that it survived, and we can put it online for you to listen to. If you want to read some of Rabbi Krinsky's poems, take a look at A Tribute to My Teacher by Rabbi Edward Zarin, published by JHSD in 2014. Rabbi Zarin translated some of Krinsky's poems from Yiddish, and the book provides a dual-language Yiddish-English presentation of these moving poems and their beautifully crafted translations. You can learn more by visiting the publications link on our website. Next, we see Dr. Lewis Levinson, Dora Markowitz, and Drs. David and Edith Platt. Helena Wind Preston is one of the people who were interviewed more than once, and her story is certainly an important one to tell. We are also pleased to house materials for the Helena Wind Preston Holocaust Education Committee at the Delaware Center for Jewish History at the Cox House, and to work with them to help new generations learn and understand the Holocaust. We have other stories of survivors in our collection. H. Albert Young and Leo Zeftel are next. And we end with Harry David Zutz. As you can see, the highlights page certainly has a fascinating collection of oral history interviews. We hope you will visit and explore these remarkable stories. But before we move on to the next pages, let's zoom in again. At the bottom of each of the panels, you will find buttons to open the audio files on your computer or mobile device. Next to some of the listen buttons, you will find a read button to open a transcription of the oral history interview. In other cases, the button says, you can help, and you certainly can help. We would welcome volunteers to transcribe oral history tapes so we have a better idea of the information they contain. But there are other ways to help if you feel that a transcription is too big of an undertaking. Just listening and taking a few notes can be a big help. Below, you see a button that says, Browse by Topic. Well, that opens up our digital collection page and a whole bunch of tags that help us sort and categorize and organize the items in our digital collections. If you click on any of these, Family Life, for example, you will see the interviews that discuss family life. These tags were organized by Mary Rose Fay, who prepared the highlights page, but we need similar tags for every one of our recordings. There are hundreds of hours of tape recordings, and we hope we can crowdsource the activity with your help. When you listen, make a list, little phrases, names of people, synagogues, organizations, employers, professions. Does the interview subject talk about experiences of anti-Semitism, or share memories of traveling to Israel, or discuss their career? Your little notes can be a very big help, and it's easy to do. Next, let's explore the interviews that were done recently by Dahlia Handelman, a summer scholars intern who has worked with us since 2019. Dahlia prepared a poster presentation for the symposium at UD in August 2019. The summer scholars all make presentations to share what they were working on during the summer. You can see the full poster by clicking on the button.
Her interviews with the Delaware Jewish community got a lot of attention at UD, and an article about the project was published in U Daily. Dahlia's interviews include Yetta Chaikin, a very special lady when you talk about our oral history collection. I don't have an accurate count of how many interviews were conducted by Yetta because we haven't listened to every recording yet, but it's an amazing number. She did so much to promote and nurture oral history in the Delaware Jewish community that we will be forever in her debt. Then we have Connie Kreshtool and Faith and Lou Brown. In addition to the joint interview with Lou and Faith, Dahlia also interviewed Faith Brown in a recording that was videotaped by University of Delaware. There's an interview with Helen Gordon, Anne Jaffe, Francis Stein, Buddy and Phyllis Aronson. In the summer of 2021, Dahlia interviewed Barbara Yalosov. We still need to add a biographical sketch to Barbara's entry, but the recording is there, and we guess they had a good time. That interview is 2 hours long. Roger Horowitz's oral history class in the fall of 2019 also interviewed members of the Delaware Jewish community. Those interviews are on the fall page. These interviews include Marilyn Levin, Dana and Roger Levy, Marty and Shelley Mand, Richard and Marcy Margolin, Diane Sklut, and Judy Zucker. The interview recordings are all there, but we're still working on the photos and biographical sketches. We hope this page will look a lot better soon, with your help. Beyond the highlights and special pages, there are dozens and dozens of recordings. I've created an alphabetical list to make it easier to find the names you were looking for, but there is so much more to be done. When you click on most of the names, you'll see an item like this. Certainly, Mutzi deserves more than this. There's a 17-minute recording from 2003. Listen to it and make some notes. Some entries contain more information, like this one for Bill Frank. Mary Rose Bay collected a number of obituaries for the names on the list, but we need more. And can anyone help me find out who Mrs. Goldie is? Is this the Goldie family from Goldie Beacom College? This 1973 interview may be a treasure trove. Let's get that story unlocked. We have the key. It's you. If one of the recordings in the collection was made by someone in your family, I'm sure you'll want to listen to it, but consider doing more. Make some notes. In most cases, the only information we have about these recordings is a couple of words jotted down on a label. If you make a note about the date and the interviewer's name, we can include that information for our cataloging data. It's a big help. And some things you know about your family could be even more help. What was your mother's maiden name? When she talked about her grandmother, who was she talking about? If she mentions a synagogue, which one was she referring to? Often the interviewer didn't ask for additional details, but your knowledge can fill in the gaps, and again, improve our cataloging. We have a student from Cab Calloway School who is currently researching Sidney Steelman, one of the men who was killed in action during World War II. She's looking for some background about the life in a Jewish neighborhood when he was growing up in the 1930s. It would be great to be able to let her listen to all the recordings where people talked about Second Street and the YMHA basketball games. Help us do that. You can work at home in a comfortable chair at your own speed. Of course, we are always happy to have you visit the Delaware Center for Jewish History at the Cox House, and we would be happy to make you as comfortable as possible while you're there. But there is so much you can do right at home, in your fluffy slippers, and without searching for a parking space. We are doing our best to remove as many barriers as possible so you can volunteer to help with this important work. Just call. All of the oral histories are fascinating, even if the interview subject wasn't a member of your family. If your family or more recent members of the Jewish community of Delaware
and you don't remember Lundy's Delicatessen or basketball games at the YMHA, there are still hundreds of reasons to listen to these interviews. We all read stories, memoirs, and biographies of people who are not members of our family, and they can transport us to another time and place and give us insight and perspectives that enrich our understanding and our lives. The stories make us laugh, and we recognize attitudes that are familiar, or they can help us begin to see things from an unfamiliar perspective and make sense of the world in a new way. Our oral history collection is not just for those who want to remember the good old days. We're happy to work with you using the website and answer your questions. We've gotten a lot more comfortable with Zoom meetings and other tools that were strange a couple of years ago. I know that many of you were hoping to hear about creating your own oral history recording, and I certainly hope that we can cover that topic in the very near future. One of our members created an award-winning family history based on the oral history interviews she made with her family. We hope Gloria Fine will help us prepare some tips for those of you who want to follow her example. While we could talk for another hour, it is not our intention to cover everything today. It's also important that we listen. We want to hear your story and add it to our collection. And we promise we won't keep them locked up. JHSD is dedicated to making our collections ever more accessible to you and to future generations. I'm Gail Pietchik, archivist at the Jewish Historical Society of Delaware, and I will be happy to work with you so your story, too, can be told. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. I believe Ben is going to put up a form to allow people to indicate that they'd like to volunteer. And while that's happening, I want to talk about the question and answer session. You should see an oral history contact form. All you have to do is say yes or no, and we will get back to you. Thank you. So that ends the formal presentations of our program today. We will open the floor and unmute people for question and answers. It would be ideal if you use the reactions button on my screen, it's at the bottom of my screen, that will allow you to electronically raise your hand. If that doesn't work for you, you can try raising your hand physically, but with multiple screens, we may not see everybody. So the best thing to do if we don't get to your question is please put it in the chat. We will be recording the chat and get back to you as time permits. So I'm going to open the floor for questions. And Ben, would you please unmute everybody? Okay. So I'm not seeing questions. But while we're waiting to see if we have any questions, I wanted to just mention that for the newly elected board, there will be a mini board meeting at the very end of this program. So those people should please stay on later. Tina, do you see anybody in the chat asking a question?
No, there were just some comments earlier to, you know, thanks for the program and the information.
Good. I kind of assumed there would be more questions. I guess we have given you a very thorough introduction to oral history in general and what has happened in Delaware. I want to thank everybody whose family and individuals who've contributed to the oral history program to date. In preparation for this meeting, I listened to all 2 hours of the Barbara Yaloslav interview. It was so entertaining. She mentions people I actually know, so it doesn't go back before my time in Delaware. And you could tell that she and Dahlia, for a 1920-year-old, she was able to really establish great relationships with the people she interviewed. And it really comes out in her interview with Faith and with Barbara. I'm still open for questions. I guess we have.
So I have a comment. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have a comment for Gail.
I have a lot of photos and materials about our 60 years of our choral and dance groups who are still in existence. So if you want to contact me at Lodge Lane, I'll be happy to give them to you. Okay, I'm sure my children have mentioned that to you, right?
Yes, Faith, they have. And we had a box that your son and daughter-in-law, I believe, brought over in the fall. And we had a volunteer from University of Delaware this spring who's cataloged it all. So we've got that already organized.
Okay.
So we're making good progress on this.
Good. I have a lot more photos too that might interest you from 1957. So goes back a long way.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
And I think there's a question in the chat, but first I see Tony Young's hand. Tony?
Yes, I just have to take the chance, Diane, to thank you and everybody who's spoken today. This has been such a fabulous program. All of you are doing a wonderful job, and it just makes me so pleased to see how much progress the Jewish Historical Society is making under your leadership and that of all the people who spoke today. So thank you all. Thanks so much. It's so invigorating to see this.
Well, thank you, Tony, for all your leadership and support of the society. I think Steve Ross had a question. Tina?
No, I was just applauding Tony.
I think Steve Ross had a question.
He has a question that's really directed to Gail, assuming we even know the answer to this. How much of the original monthly minutes were written in either German or Yiddish and still need to be translated?
Right. Steve, for those of you who don't know, is responsible for the translation of a big chunk of the records of Otis Kodesh from its very early years, from Yiddish into English.
That's
and
Gail.
Those translations are available on our digital collections. Now, this is printed translations. This isn't audio. And so when you visit the digital collections portal, you'll be able to see the Otis Kodesh collection, and that includes these records from that were translated from Yiddish into English. So now we can actually read what the minutes look like from the 1890s. So we are still, in order to see how much more needs to be translated, and answer Steve's questions, I have to go back to the actual records, because I think a good chunk of what we have in our holdings has already been translated. But I'll check on that, Steve, and get back to you. Thanks.
I can answer briefly. When we packed up Otis Kodesh materials, there was one ledger on display there. So for sure there's that one.
Oh, okay.
That is now at the Historical Society. So at least one more, and I think it's around 1919 to 1925. So maybe it was one of the later ones, and it's in a combination of Yiddish and English.
I see Bob Coonan has a hand up.
Yeah, I have a question. I have something in my chambers in the courthouse, which, by the way, sits directly on top of the old JCC when I was a kid. I didn't know if it was something you might be interested in. In 1966, the then Jewish Youth Board of Wilmington put on a public forum called The Principle of Dissent, Its Use and Misuse. And the guest speaker was Senator Wayne Morse of Wisconsin, who was the first U.S. senator ever to speak out against the Vietnam War, or as my father called him, that commie. But in any event, I have a picture of myself and Senator Morse and Beth Silverman, who was the other officer there, as well as the invitation to this particular event. If that's something you might be interested in, I can see to it that you get it.
That'd be great, Bob.
had a little distraction there from somebody who decided that she'd like to go out. But yeah, I'll be in touch with you.
Okay, thank you.
About that, definitely.
Some interesting comments in the chat for those of you who aren't seeing it. The Wagmans say that there are 21 videos of the Café Tamar concerts between 1985 and 2019. So they're still going to be uploaded to the digital collection as well. And we've got a comment from Terry Feinberg Spodek from Hawaii, just thankful for making all this available.
And in response to Janice's note about the University of Delaware collection, we do have listings of the of the oral history interviews in the University of Delaware collection that deal with the Jewish community. I will be adding that list and a link to the University of Delaware collection to our webpage. But I did not discuss that in the presentation simply because I'd already gone on for too long. So I needed to, that one ended up on the cutting room floor, Janice, but it's certainly a wonderful collection at University of Delaware. It's in the special collections department at the Morris Library. And I encourage those who are interested in Jewish oral history to visit that collection as well.
I'm going to add that it may be good for all of us to look at that list because we may recognize Jewish names that haven't been presented as Jewish oral histories. For example, there were a whole group of people from the who were at UD in 1968 who were interviewed about the unrest on campus. And and my husband was one of those interviewees, and it never occurred to me that that should be in the Jewish or linked to the Jewish Historical Society. So we should all look at those and see what might fit.
Well, this speaks especially to the fact that you are all members and we value your participation. We're not just here to give you stuff. You've got so much to contribute. So use that email link, send me a note, let me know some of what you know so that we can make our cataloging, our website, all of our information as complete and accurate as possible. Don't hesitate to get in touch.
Thank you.
I think we're going to wrap up the meeting now. A lot of people have already been thanked. I want to thank Ben Spahn, who has been our Zoom master today. His input has been really helpful, and I think that the flow has been terrific. Thank you, Ben. Although I thanked Richard Levin, I'll thank him again, and all the officers and board members who've worked very hard to get us to where we are today. I wish we could include all our interns and volunteers. We had a volunteer from the University of Delaware History Department this past spring who learned about the bowels of the JCC storage area. You know, you don't know what you're gonna get into when you volunteer with us. I think with that, I'm gonna thank all of you for attending and ask for the 2022-23 board to stay on the Zoom so we can have our brief business meeting. Thanks.
Good to you, Ronnie. Yep. Bye.
Goodbye,
thank
Diane.
Thank you so much. That was great. Thanks.
Inedible corn oil to make renewables right now.
Diane, I'm not sure a past president is part of the board or I'm supposed to go to.
You are welcome to stay because you
responsible for a lot of this.
You are a voting member of, you're a voting past president. So if you have the time, we'd love to have you stay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'll just wait a couple minutes. Okay, I think we are, this is not confidential, so I think we can get going. First of all, I want to especially welcome Robin Sarin and Mike Joseph, who are our newest board members. Thank you for serving. Okay, the only order of business we have for this board meeting is to elect officers. For those of you who haven't recently read our bylaws, this is what's called for. The membership elects the board and the board elects the officers. The slate as distributed is President Diane Wolf, VP for Membership and Marketing, Harriet Einbinder, VP for Finance and Development, Don Parsons, VP for Building and Grounds, Ron Reedman, Treasurer, Paula Gordon, Secretary, Robin Silver-Zink. I would appreciate a motion to support the election. Okay. And a second?
Second.
And it's Zoom land, so we ask for any opposed to, I think at this point, just a show of hands, because we can, so only if you're opposed to the slate would you raise your hand. It looks like we are unanimous in electing the officers, so thank you, everybody, and have a lovely, if I don't talk to you before then, have a lovely Passover, and we will have a board meeting in May. This is the April board meeting. So we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good meeting. Thank you, Diane. Wonderful meeting.
Okay. All right. I think that went pretty well. Yeah. Definitely an improvement over October.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Those of you who didn't. We had a dress rehearsal on Thursday, and we learned we had some, I knew a software developer who called them infelicities, which is a very nice word for bugs, and the infelicities were dealt with. So thank you to everybody. I'm going to get off unless anybody needs me. So
no,
thank you
no.
all. Bye.
Take care. Have a good Passover.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, Ben, I think that's it. Thank
you. So nothing else we need to consider before I log off and end the meeting for everyone else who's still on?
Yep, I think we're good.
Okay, so long.
Thanks.